Quintessential Pittsburgh, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Diane Reams Show is a relatively new addition to the 90.5 WESA lineup, having debuted on our air a little over a year ago. But Diane has been hosting her own daily talk show for over 30 years now that attracts more than 2.4 million listeners each week on public radio stations across the country. Among the honors for Diane Reams, she has won a Peabody Award and became the first radio talk show host to interview a sitting president in the Oval Office when she sat down with Bill Clinton at the White House in 2000. She is in Pittsburgh for a special event at the Hillman Center for the Performing Arts and joins us now here in Studio A. Diane Reams, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, it's so good to be here.
Do you get to Pittsburgh often?
I was here once before.
Really? When was that?
Years ago. I was here for a charitable event. Dear, dear friends of mine have two grown sons who have Fragile X syndrome, which is a very, very serious problem. And so I wore a pantsuit on the plane. I had my lovely outfit in my suitcase. I arrived at the hotel. I opened my suitcase to put on my lovely evening outfit. And what did I see but a prosthetic leg?
Uh-oh.
I had picked up a suitcase identical to mine.
Did the leg get to its...
Well, that was my first worry. I thought, oh, my God, this poor person without this leg. And, of course, I immediately called the hotel, the airport, and by midnight we got suitcases back where they belonged. And I wore my little old black pantsuit to the black tie charitable event, but... the prosthetic limb was really my concern. That was my first and only other experience with Pittsburgh. So I'm glad to be here on much happier situation.
As are we.
Thank you. You
know, a lot of folks may not realize that you were a stay-at-home mother for 14 years.
Right.
So how did you make the transition from that into broadcasting?
You know, I think as many people of that era did as a volunteer, I had no college education. I had graduated from high school. I was a secretary for many years, met my husband at the Department of State where he was an attorney and I a secretary. We married. I had our first child, then 2.5 or 3 years later, had our second child and just stayed home and learned to sew and to cook and did all kinds of things. I modeled for a while. And then when David, our son, was about 14, I thought, what in the world am I going to do with the rest of my life? Because I saw these kids leaving, and it was shortly after Betty Friedan had published her groundbreaking book. So I think a lot of us were in that, a lot of us women were in that mode of thinking, how are we going to spend the rest of our years? So I happened to run into a person who was volunteering at this tiny little radio station, WAMU, licensed to the American University. And at the time, it was so small, it went off the air when you went off the curb. Mm. But when she told me she was volunteering, honestly, little light bulb went on in my head, and I thought, wow. Could I do that? And so she arranged for me to have an interview with the host of the program, and that's where it all began. the first day I walked in as a volunteer, the host was out sick. So the manager of the station said to me that she, the manager, was going to have to host the program, and would I, as a volunteer, come into the studio with her. And so for 90 minutes, we talked with a guest from the Dairy Council.
For an hour and a half.
An hour and a half. The Dairy Council. And, of course, I, as a mother, knew all about meats and veggies and butter and fats. And so we had a good time, and I stayed on as a volunteer for 10 months, and then someone left. I moved into an associate producer part-time position, then a full-time. Then I left to do some television, and finally went on to the Associated Press Radio Network and Physicians Radio Network. And then when my former boss left, she told me she was leaving, and I, along with about 100 other people across the country, applied for her job. And I was lucky. So since 1979, I've been hosting what is now the Diane Rehm Show.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and this is 90.5 WESA. Our guest is Diane Rehm, host of the Diane Rehm Show. So without any real formalized training, what has enabled you to become the curious, effective interviewer that you are?
Listening to the radio. I mean, that's what I grew up doing. Did you? Or
sure.
Did you watch television mostly?
Both.
Well, see, I had no television in our home until the year I graduated from high school. So radio was always my medium. Listening to the soap operas, you know, Our Gal Sunday, The Shadow, The Green Hornet, all of those. And they were my form of entertainment. So when I sat down in that studio on the first day, talking into that microphone, for some reason didn't scare me, didn't bother me. It just felt as though radio was the most natural medium that anybody could ever want to be part of, to aspire to. And I think the second part of my answer to your question would be that I was raised in a very strict ethnic household where my parents did not permit questions, where what they said was what you did.
So if they told you to do something, what you couldn't say, why?
How come?
Yeah.
Never. And nor could you say, well, I'd really rather not do that because that was not acceptable. So I think I've spent my entire life, even when my husband John and I first met, he is such a brilliant lawyer that all I did was to ask him questions, and he could answer every one of them. So I think I've been, you know, just yearning to ask questions for all my life.
It sounds like you had a lot of them saved up.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Well, you mentioned being a full-fledged Arab American. How has that informed your approach to interviewing and the issues of the day?
The issues of the day are so broad and so wide that what I simply do is to work as hard as I can to understand what those issues might be. And then, like you, I'm not there to inflict my opinions on anybody. I am there to elicit opinions from everybody. So as far as, for example, the Arab-Israeli situation, I find myself feeling as though everybody needs to get a grip. Everybody needs to get their hands around this problem so that all can live in peace. And my Arab background, though I grew up in the most wonderful Arab background with so many aunts and uncles and cousins around me, you know, just this huge, huge family of wonderful people. I think what I see now is that in every Arab, there is love. In every Jew, there is love. And if they could only find their way toward each other, if they could only find their way toward that mutual desire for peace and prosperity, we'd all be in a much better situation.
When you're hosting a talk show, there are a lot of controversial issues that come up. Certainly, you know, the Diane Rehm Show is an issue-oriented show, and you cover all sorts of ground locally and or domestically and certainly globally. Has there ever been an issue that's come up that you have felt so strongly about that it was hard for you to maintain your impartiality?
Impartiality is almost an easy one for me because I'm not there to give my opinion. I am there to elicit opinions. That is not to say that I don't have very strong opinions. You know, there's an issue out there that's certainly present here in the Pittsburgh area and is certainly present in northern Pennsylvania, where my husband and I have a farm right in the Marcellus Shale. And while every other farmer in the whole region has given over to fracking, ours is the one farm that has not, because I am so concerned about the environmental aspects of fracking. Now, you talk about an issue about which I feel strongly. I mean, it just sort of sends flames out my ears. And yet, when I have people on, I'm not there to tell you how I feel about fracking. I'm not there to tell you what you ought to do about fracking. I am there to bring forward all of the points of view. So I shall continue to host programs between Democrats and Republicans, none of whom, for example, will come on at the same time. For example, we're having Nancy Pelosi come on, and she will only come on for 20 minutes. She will not take calls from listeners. She will not be on with anyone else. And I think the pattern in Washington has become so fractured itself that you can think about, you know, what's happening here in Pennsylvania in much the same way of what's happening in Washington, D.C. It's all fractured. It's all broken right now. And I can only hope that at some point, you know, once we get past all of this hullabaloo about the Affordable Care Act, once we get past all of the questions about raising the deficit or negotiating the budget, I hope that our legislators can get back to the reality that they were elected not to party, but to the public. It's so important, and it does make me feel passionate. And there are times I want to scream on the air.
You've been doing your show a long time.
Right.
As long as Nancy Pelosi's been in the House. So when someone like her comes in and wants to dictate the terms of their appearance, your show has people call in. You encourage people to do that. You've had a format that's been in place for decades. Why should you give in to someone's demands, like in this case, Nancy Pelosi's?
What we will do is to have Nancy Pelosi on for the first portion, first 20 minutes of the program, and then have three journalists analyzing exactly what she has said and offering differing opinions on what she has said and opening the phones to the guests around the country, the listeners around the country. I think it's important to hear what individual members of Congress have to say, especially those as powerful as the leader of the minority in the House. And therefore, to me, it's more about hearing what she has to say, interacting with her on my own, and then allowing others to comment. I would not say no to the minority leader of the House of Representatives.
Even if she's asking you to deviate from your established format?
We've done that many, many times with guests from the White House, with guests from the Senate, with guests from the House. It's not the first time. And I'm sure it won't be the only time.
And it doesn't bother you at some level?
No, doesn't bother me because I will get to speak with her and I hope to represent what I believe people want to ask her and to engage with her in a way that I hope will elicit some good information.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking with Diane Rehm, host of The Diane Rehm Show, heard weekdays at 10 a.m. here on 90.5 WESA.
2.5 million.
2.5 million.
Right.
Ah, well, you know, I should have just rounded that out.
Yeah.
2.5 million listeners each week on public radio stations across America.
In the States alone, we have no idea about international listenership. That's not been tallied, nor do we know about streaming, people who download to their iPad. None of that is figured into that 2.5 million. So I'm always bragging.
Well, why not? Had you envisioned, could you have envisioned anything like the amount of people you reach on a regular basis when you first started this endeavor?
You know, even now, Paul, I don't think about that at all, except when people use numbers. What I think about is sitting here talking to you, sitting in my own studio talking to three or four guests. You know, every now and then somebody has come in and said, oh, I'm nervous, all of these people are out there. And I said, don't think about those. It's just you and me. That's all I think about. And I'm sure you do the same thing. Here you are in Pittsburgh, this wonderful town, this wonderful city with all these advantages in terms of theater, in terms of music, in terms of sports, in terms of huge charitable organizations, and they're all listening to you. You don't think about all of that when you do your program. What you're thinking about, I hope, is talking with me, and that's how I think about it.
You have a very distinct voice. People notice that.
Yep.
You were diagnosed with spasmodic dysphonia, which is a neurological voice disorder.
Right.
That causes strained, difficult speech.
Strangling.
When did you first know that you had it?
Well, I started feeling these problems in about 1992 and started going to doctors first with this little tiny cough. I kept going, and that then evolved into having a hard time getting my words out. So I started going to ENT after ENT. They all started putting tubes down my throat, which I think exacerbated the problem. And finally, in 1998, it was so bad. Paul, here's how it sounded. I could barely get a word out. And that's how it sounded the last day I was on the air. I had to go downtown to host moderate a program at some hotel, 300 people there. And I said as little as possible. There were three guests. I think we were talking about gossip in Washington. And right after it was over, I ran back to my station and went to my manager and I said, I'm out of here. And he said, what do you mean you're out of here? And I said, well, I have to get off the air. I have to find out what the problem is with my voice. And of course, program directors around the country had begun asking, what is going on with her voice? And my manager said to me, well, how long do you think you will be gone? And I said, I have no idea. And he said, fundraiser is next week. And I said, sorry, can't do a thing about it. And I left. I was off the air for 4 months sitting at home in total depression, not knowing whether my career was finished. I couldn't talk. I wouldn't go out of the house. I wouldn't answer the telephone because the voice sounded so bad. I couldn't go to the drugstore and pick up a prescription because I couldn't say my own name. And finally, one day, our internist called my husband and said, we have to get her to Johns Hopkins. We have to find out if it's Parkinson's or cancer of the throat that's been missed or ALS or something. And within 1 hour, a neurologist and otolaryngologist diagnosed me with, as you said correctly, spasmodic dysphonia. They gave me an injection of botulinum toxin directly into the vocal cords that day. And in 6 more weeks, I was back on the air. Now, I have to have those injections every 5 or 6 months. And unfortunately, my doctor from Johns Hopkins has now moved out to the Oregon Health Sciences University. So I fly out there to get the injection. And then it takes me a couple of weeks to get back on the air because what the botulinum toxin does is to paralyze the cords, the vocal cords, so they're wide open. And then it takes a couple of weeks for them to come back together and begin to vibrate normally. So I'll live with this for the rest of my life. Our listeners have just been so supportive. I cannot tell you how many people have written in and said, my doctor says I have what you have. So lots of people who did not understand or know spasmodic dysphonia before I got it, now understand what they have.
You have written books. There were certainly other career paths, perhaps, when all this came about that you could have chosen to follow. Why was it important for you, Diane, to stay on the air, even with the challenges that your voice poses?
That's a good question, Paul. I don't think I've ever been asked that before. I think I am such, and always have been in my adult life, a fighter, fighting for what I wanted to continue to do, fighting because I believe in what you and I do. I believe in being able to reach the people through the sound of the voice and the voice alone. I think that television does something else. It shows images. It shows people. It shows scenes. And those are all very valuable. But in doing what you and I do, we focus on the sound of the human voice, and we and the people out there who are listening are not distracted by what we look like, what we're wearing, how we're moving, what the color of our eyes are. They just listen to our voice. And I think the voice is a mind-to-mind medium. And therefore, I want to continue to do this, not to spread my ideas, but to gather in what other people have to say and make sure that people hear these wide diversity of ideas and thoughts, and not just one idea or one thought. So that's why I want to continue doing it. And NPR and we have just signed a brand new 3-year contract. So I'll keep on keeping on.
Well, I was going to ask you how long you would continue to host the Diane Rehm Show, but the answer is at least 3 more years, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very happy doing what I'm doing.
Are women making the kinds of inroads in broadcasting today that you would like to see? I mean, certainly you're a pioneer and you are someone that people can, you know, look to for inspiration. But as you look at the state of things, what is your assessment?
See, the real pioneers for me were Susan Stamberg, Cokie Roberts, Linda Wertheimer. They were the ones who were there when I got there. So I never walked in and felt, oh, gosh, I'm a woman. I'm going to be put into some lesser place of thinking about a career or broadcasting. I have never felt that way. For some reason, maybe I was thick-skinned or And I've worked for both men and women in broadcasting, and they've all treated me with respect for what I produce, not because I'm a man or a woman. I'm a woman. I am who I am. I do think that certainly public broadcasting has led the way. Public broadcasting has been the pioneer in putting women front and center in terms of their ability to report not only on domestic issues, but think about the people we've got in foreign places like India and Pakistan and Sarajevo and Iran and Syria and Lebanon. I mean, just think about that. And that's what NPR has done. Even as larger networks like CBS, NBC, CNN have closed down bureaus. Here we have women reporting from all over the world. So not only do I think we've made great progress, I think we were terrific at leading the way.
The Diane Rehm Show is heard weekday mornings at 10 on 90.5 WESA by some 2.5 million listeners.
Thank you, Paul.
And Diane Rehm is in Pittsburgh and has taken time to visit with us here in Studio A on Essential Pittsburgh. Diane Rehm, thank you again so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Paul, I loved it. Thank you.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up on 90.5 WESA.
When I'm driving in my car, I always put on NPR and hope to hear the voice of Diane Rehm. Where does she go? Now I finally know. She's resting the best voice on the team. And when I drive in my car, I'm going to put on NPR and hope to hear the voice.